conference. Just a few quick housekeeping items before we get started here. Please be aware that this is an open line. Noises on your end are going to be heard by all participants. So we ask that in the interest of those who are recording this, that you please place your phone on mute. You can do that by pressing star 6 or pressing mute the regular way. But please do that when you are not asking a question. When you are asking a question, we ask that you say your name and outlet when introducing yourself. I'm going to kick it over to Chairman Conaway, and he'll make some opening remarks, and then he'll kick it over to Vice Chairman Thompson for some opening remarks, and then we'll open up to your questions. We'll try to get to as many as possible today. So with that, I'll kick it over to the chairman.
Well, thanks, Rachel. Appreciate everybody being on the line this morning. We had a momentous day yesterday for those of us that were supportive of what the Ag Committee did. 3 years in the making, some 114 hearings that went into coming up to the bill that was introduced and marked up yesterday. Spirited debate, a lot of misunderstanding, and still a lot of misinformation being the Democrats are laboring under. We hope that over the next several days, before we go to the floor, that those misunderstandings and just flat wrong ideas can be cleared up as to what our bill actually does. I'll talk a little bit about the non-SNAP portion, and then I'll ask my vice chair, G.D. Thompson, also chairman of the Subcommittee on Nutrition, who's done incredible work getting this thing to where we are today, to talk about briefly about the SNAP provisions. But the non-SNAP titles are relatively the same as they were out of the 14 bill. Those of you that are directly involved in production agriculture know that 2014 was a substantial change to the programs. The commodity title, cotton and dairy, were back under or were taken care of as a part of the disaster bill passed early this year. Not a lot of changes there. We update the ARC County payment scheme to use better data. We allow for some adjustments to yield based on droughts, significant droughts, so more fine-tuning in that one. On conservation, we eliminate the CSP program. We don't abrogate any of those existing contracts. They all get to run off, but we're just not going to create any new CSP contracts. That money then will pivot over to EQIP, which many of us believe is a better use of taxpayer dollars in terms of addressing conservation issues across this land. The other titles, trade, research, rural development, all of those we have, more fine-tuning than anything else, and so looking forward to having maybe some specific questions if those of you have them. So with that, I'll turn now to what we did the most work on in terms of changes, and that's the SNAP title and Title IV Nutrition, and I'll turn now to my colleague G.T. Thompson for his thoughts.
Well, Chairman, thank you. This is Congressman G.T. I appreciate everyone that's participating in this today. Yesterday was the high mark of the day is the fact that we've advanced this farm bill out of committee, and we did that. Now looking forward to going to the floor. The unfortunate part yesterday were the politics, some of the first politics I've seen from some of my colleagues. I've worked very closely on this nutrition title one, and it seemed like they were focused on nutrition title when we've done over 21 hearings, over 80 witnesses over the course of now the fourth year actually of doing that, and that part was not so positive for me. That was very disappointing. But in the end, I would think even for my friends that were engaged in that, I think they should be pleased. They did, despite some of the rhetoric, they knew enough about the bill that they put forth four priorities. They didn't put it in the form of amendments. They didn't have to, because we seized on those that input from my Democratic friends and colleagues. On the nutrition title, there were four different areas, that we made sure that we incorporated into the base language, including the one that seemed to be the topic of discussion most. I mean, they specifically, 19 of them wrote to the chairman and the ranking member asking that we certainly continue to encourage states to collaborate with businesses and education leaders to provide innovative employment and training options, opportunities, and programs. That's the words that they submitted to the chairman. That's what the chairman shared with me, and that's what we put in the nutrition title. We accomplished that, and there were a number of other good improvements that we all agreed upon, including taking our funding for our food banks and pantries that play such an important role of addressing food insecurity. And let's food insecurity is what I mean, that's a big part of the Farm Bill. 77% of what we spend in the Farm Bill is to address food insecure people and families. And so we've done that with, again, with our food banks. We've taken that from $15 million to $60 million funding. $20 million of that we actually target specifically to allow our food banks and pantries to work directly with our farmers so that they can take excess commodities. It's really about putting more fresh foods into our food banks and food pantries, and that's a pretty cool program. Actually, we've seen that work. This is data-based. That's been tried and tested in my home state of Pennsylvania and very popular. We've also incentivized nutrition education and healthy eating through continuation of the FINNE program, which I'm a big fan of, the Food Insecurity Nutrition Incentive. That was something we kind of piloted in the past. We actually provide baseline funding for it. Very, very exciting. We build on that, actually, of providing retailer incentives, allowing our retailers to be able to, and providing them support, incentivizing them to stretch those SNAP EBT benefits just a little further. If people come and they use their EBT card to purchase fresh and healthy foods, so fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, dairy. Those are the types of things, obviously, that make for help round out a good, healthy diet. And then continue to encourage states to promote the use of cutting-edge technology, ensure that the SNAP retailers and recipients have secure, reliable, and efficient benefits processing. One of the specific things there that I think most states are very, very receptive to is the fact that right now, if they find fraud and abuse, and it's estimated to be about $700 million out of that hundreds of billions of dollars we invest in fraud and abuse, and $1 of abuse takes a dollar out of the stomach of a hungry person. So that's why we're trying to do our best to be good stewards with fraud and abuse. We're actually incentivizing, rewarding the states, allowing them to keep, under this new bill, up to 50% of what they discover in fraud and abuse. Now, we do require them, though, they have to reinvest that back into the nutrition title.
Well, GT, thanks. Let's go to our questions now for folks out there. Just let us know who you are and where you represent. We'll be happy to try to answer your questions.
Again, Mr. Chairman, Jeff Nally with the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. How will you handle the amendment process, and who will be able to offer amendments, and what indication do you have from the Freedom Caucus that they may support your language?
So yesterday in the committee, it was an open, totally open process. So anybody could have offered any amendment they wanted to. The Democrats chose to offer not one single amendment yesterday. They all had criticisms of the bill, but nobody had any constructive criticism with respect to the amendment that would have changed it. We go to the floor. I would anticipate that it would be a relatively open process. Of course, any member of the House of Representatives is eligible to offer an amendment. They will have to go through the rules process. One of the things I will have from my voice would say is that if you're going to be a no on passage of the bill anyway, no matter what happens, then whatever poison pill amendment that you're proposing really shouldn't be made in order. So, but we'll see. The Rules Committee gets to drive that train. GT and I will weigh in on our side of it, but our good colleagues on the Rules Committee will decide what amendments are made in order. And the Freedom Caucus, I'm sorry, good comments from those guys. Mark Meadows is on record saying he sees nothing in the bill that would cause him to vote no. I've had other individual conversations with folks who I believe are in the Freedom Caucus, but you don't know for sure unless they tell you that. Good comments and a good meeting then with Jim Jordan as well.
Thank you.
Other questions?
This is Grant Gerlach. I'm with Nebraska Public Radio. I had a question about SNAP. How do the current work standards in SNAP fall short? Why include a larger pool of people?
Well, because every person in this country that is experiencing food insecurity as a result of acute financial distress, which is about 35% of SNAP recipients, these 35% are folks who are work capable between the ages of 18 and 59. They do not have a disability. We make an exemption for if you're a single parent with a child that's not in school yet, because obviously raising those kids, looking after those kids is obviously is the first responsibility. But if beyond that, every person that finds himself food insecure within that category ought to have pathway to opportunity, an on-ramp to opportunity. And so that's what this does, where we have nine states where we have seen, I think, good success. We don't have final reports yet, but we've had like three interim reports. We are tracking the data and the trends. And as you heard yesterday, even from my friends across the aisle, well, when they interact in their states, they're hearing good things when they check in on these programs, where it's both anecdotally and quite frankly, statistically. And so we want to create certainty here. We want to provide a training slot opportunity for every person so that they can get the food security they need. More importantly, the best way to address food insecurity is to give them better access to more effective skills-based education. And some of this we're not talking two-year and four-year degrees. We're talking a little bit of training, a specialization, a certification. It may involve on-the-job training where you go right in and start to earn a paycheck, but with the right supports to the employer, they create these apprenticeship programs.
And or subsidized employment.
Exactly.
Yep. So it's and all states will have a 15% waiver that they will be able to use to monitor and to cope with all those individual issues that no single piece of legislation can cope with. As an example, somebody breaks an arm or they become incapacitated for a short period of time, that might cause them to fall outside the requirement. The state can say, all right, we know what's going on there, because in addition to the employment work, we're also going to have case management assessments going on. So somebody at the state will know what's going on with that particular person, will be able to tailor these assistance programs to help them, as well as having access to all the other broader array of things that we do to try to help folks that way outside the scope of SNAP. But those professionals, the case managers and others, they know what these other programs are and how to plug families in. So we believe we give states all the flexibility they need to be able to cope with individual circumstances in their populations.
And flexibility is a key word there for the states. This morning I had the privilege and honor of addressing a wonderful organization that I've worked closely with in my in different capacities, Goodwill. Goodwill is, this is the second year in a row. They're the number one brand in the world for doing good. I told them they need to come in and speak to us in Congress and how we get our brand numbers.
Well, maybe
up.
We could go good Congress.
Yeah, there you go. But they were excited about the SNAP education and training package that's on the table. They're involved in working with people that have been incarcerated, people that have been with disabilities, just folks who live with different challenges. They're very excited about that, and I was really pleased to see how positive they were on this and their support this morning.
Other questions?
PJ Griegspoor with Farm Progress Companies. I'm interested in knowing what the funding mechanism is going to be for establishing infrastructure. You're talking about all the caseworkers that are going to be able to follow individually and help people that may have an immediate problem, an illness or an injury or something that takes them temporarily out of the workforce. Where are all these case managers coming from, and where's the money to pay them coming from?
Well, every state will have the flexibility to decide how they want to put their plan and how they want to put their program in place. They will get a block of money based on a per amount per their SNAP enrollee. Now, the group that's going to be affected by that is a much smaller number, but each state will get that. And so every state has a unemployed population that has certain or no skills, and they have jobs in their state which require skills. No one's better to bridge that gap from understanding what needs to be done than the folks in the states. GT and I can't do that for 50 states here in Washington, D.C. I trust Texas to be able to get that done. So they'll have a block of money to do that. They'll have a range of things they can do. GT mentioned apprenticeships, subsidized employment, and all those programs. And so the administration will come in out of that. They'll put together a plan over the next 2 years, share that with USDA, and if it makes if it fits in the parameters that are built in the bill, then they'll have the resources to move forward. And I've got great confidence in the states. GT and I are pretty strong about the 10th Amendment. We think states can take care of themselves, and all this conversation yesterday to the contrary, that it basically undersold what states were capable of doing just because it's they've not been doing it is, I think, not a particularly persuasive argument for me.
And the state's going to be able to work with any willing and able partner. So workforce, our career links, our one-stops, which are already funded under the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. All those programs are funded under the Perkins Act, which, by the way, we already passed that bill out of the House unanimously. It, over the next, we get it through the Senate, it actually increases also an additional investment in skills-based education for each year for the next 5 years. Willing and able partners, I just point back to agencies such as that a state could work with and empower, which I would certainly encourage them, would be like Goodwill, who does that type of case management, who does case management that deals with child care issues, that does case management that deals with transportation
capabilities
issues.
That folks have?
Yeah.
Plugs into the jobs that they can actually do.
Yeah, community colleges. We're not talking about that's one of the false claims that this creates a whole new bureaucracy. Quite frankly, I would say if this actually created a new level of bureaucracy, I think, speaking with confidence, neither the chairman or I would support this proposal.
That's right. Other comments?
Hi, Congressman. This is Rachel Lane with Farm World. I am calling. I have a quick question for you regarding transportation assistance. I know a lot of people that are on the SNAP program have transportation issues. Are you going to assist with that at all?
We raised the standard. Right now, under the asset test, you could have a car that's valued at $4,650, a bit of a clunker. We moved that standard to $12,000. So the first $12,000 of value of a car that would not count against a family on the licensed driver aspects against their asset test, because we want them to have a car. Those who can afford it, obviously, we want to have a car that can get them to and from work on a reliable basis. Transportation for folks who don't have it, obviously a big deal, but nothing specific in here other than allowing the states as they work with their population to see what they need, then bringing other resources to bear on the transportation issue or child care or others is appropriate. We can't solve every problem known to man with this program. We're not intending to. What we are trying to solve is for those folks who want to help themselves, who want to get off that endless treadmill of poverty and get on that on-ramp, we're going to give them that helping hand up. Now, is it all of the helping hand they need? Probably not, but it's going to be a really good one. And we're going to put, three times the resources dedicated through this program that's currently out there. So if you don't want to improve it, this argument, well, you're just not spending enough. Well, there's not any more to spend. And in addition, states have always got a 50% match of their own funds that they want to put together to put skin in the game. So we'll put up 100% money. Then there's existing right now 50% programs that states can, if they put up their own dollars, we would match that with an additional 50% in the area. So we just think this is going to be a great way to kind of prime the pump moving forward. This argument that we're not spending enough, well, you can make that argument on just about every program out there. But if the question is, don't spend this $1 billion a year on trying to help people or not spend anything because you can't spend $50 billion a year, that's again, unpersuasive in my view.
Congressman, this is Tom Stever. I'm with Brownfield Ag News in Jefferson City, Missouri. Some of the no votes in comments yesterday expressed disappointment about this being a partisan bill. My question is, what can be done or what is within your reach to perhaps promote some unity within this as this goes to the floor?
Well, we're going to work with anybody who's willing to help. As I said yesterday, the Dems had some great criticisms that would have made terrific amendments that GT and I would have went, wow, that's a great idea, let's move forward. My colleagues chose to not do that. I can't force them to the table. I'm open to it. I've done nothing to flush them off. But they, when I said, no, we're going to strengthen work requirements, well, that was a killer. They said, no, we're not. And they sent me a press release saying that their opposition to the changes that GT and I were proposing was non-negotiable. And I took them at their word, and then sure enough, yesterday they showed up unwilling to negotiate. So if you've got a deal and the other side says, I don't like it, I got that. But I'm not going to come up with a new deal trying to incentivize them, which is the old adage, you don't negotiate with yourself. And so my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, if they will put something up, they will have some constructive ideas to put forward. As GT mentioned earlier, we've already incorporated all the ones they put up the first time on the first pass through this. That wasn't enough, but between now and a couple of weeks when we get this done, I'm hopeful also that the public sentiment, polling shows that among Democrats it's a 71% approval rating, among Republicans it's 90%. On a blended basis, it's about an 80% issue among Americans out there who want SNAP recipients that are work capable, who are not physically, mentally disabled, who don't have a child under six. They want them to work or to try to train to work. They want to help themselves. Now, if the recipient out there, potential recipient out there, looks at these array of benefits, array of help, array of skills, and say, or of opportunity, say, you know, that $150 a month SNAP, just not worth it. I don't want to go through all that. I want to work 20 hours a week. Fantastic. This is America. That's a decision that person gets to make for themselves. And so, you know, we're not going to hold a gun on you and say you have to participate in SNAP, and then we're going to make you do these other things. This is a free will choice that folks get to make on their own. And if they want to make it, they want to help themselves. This country has got the biggest heart for anybody who wants to help themselves. We are all willing to try to get you back to where you were before, or to get you to someplace new that you've never been before, and that is taking care of yourself, making enough money to take care of your own family, making your own decisions, and being responsible for yourself, that dignity of work that all of us believe is there. Quite frankly, even most every colleague yesterday on the nose, bragged on work and what great how it helped people and how much they were in favor of work. And I kept thinking, well, maybe they're going to vote yes on the bill, but it turned out that wasn't the case.
Mr. Chairman,
do you have any?
Who's this?
This is PJ Griegspoor with Farm Progress.
Yes,
do you have any statistics on how many SNAP recipients fall into that 18 to 59 able-bodied, no disabilities category?
We do, but there are a lot of anecdotes. Right now, we don't have good data, quite frankly. And I'll get GT's got some numbers here in a second. But one of the things we do in the bill is we create an opportunity for us to understand who's on SNAP, how long they've been on SNAP, how long they come and go, all those kind of things that you'd want to know and able to be analyze a program. Right now, that's all kept on a state-level basis, and we can't get access to it on a federal basis. The other thing it does is if you've got people who are gaming the system, trying to qualify for benefits in two different states, we couldn't catch that today. And as GT mentioned, fraud is a big deal to us, and you know, we'll be able to catch that. But once this bill is implemented, we'll soon have that information on a more real basis. But the best guess is right now, GT?
Well, it'd be about 5 to 7 million, but you have to understand that a significant percentage of the folks who are on SNAP are on for temporary times. And so they sometimes rotate on, they rotate off, it's different people. But that would be estimated to be about 5 to 7 million.
Let me make this point. And they kept talking about the working poor. If you're working 20 hours a week plus and your income level is below the 130 mark and your asset thesis is, you're on SNAP. You have nothing new to do. You're there. And so that's an automatic qualifier under these programs, is simply having a job that you're at more than 20 hours a week, and that gets you in the market. And so we're not going after those people at all.
No, but we are, I think, giving them an opportunity. That was something I was concerned that the working poor that may just sort of not be qualified because they are working 20 hours, but they're working part-time. They're underemployed.
Right.
They're working two and three jobs, no benefits. It's they're struggling because of the fact that a significant portion of the $1 billion we're investing will be investing in our Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, our Career Links and One Stops. I don't know, just actually, those are kind of folks that actually, you know, that's an existing place that you can go to. We're going to better position those One Stops and Career Links to help those working poor who, maybe with just a little bit of training or an apprenticeship or supportive employment, could find themselves in a sustainable wage situation.
Well, and employers are going to be a key to this as well, because there are new jobs being created with new skill sets needed. And those employers out there, I know one big big box retailer, I was talking to one of the representatives the other day, they're going to dedicate $50 million to create an apprenticeship program for vets who want to become carpenters or sheetrock guys or electricians or plumbers in order to help that group. But also, it's been self-serving because they think if they help these folks become apprentices and they become a journeyman a worker, they're going to go back to that store to buy stuff. So, you know, it helps them as well, but it's a great investment that they're making, separate and apart from anything that GT and I are doing with respect to this. So employers out there have a vested interest in getting people into the worksite. Every place GT and I go, back home, got now hiring signs up. They want employees. They're looking for employees, and maybe they need just a little bit of training, or just part of this will be an opportunity for the state to work with somebody to just get them, ready to go to work every day, and then showing up and help them understand those job skills, interview skills, the things that maybe you're doing now, but they could do it in a more fulsome way, because we've got a growing economy that's going to get growing even faster. This couldn't come at a better time to actually show results, because the people out there are going to be wanting to hire folks, and I think in businesses, they see this investment by the federal taxpayer. I think like this big box retailer will show up and start saying their own, we'll put some of our own money on that to get people in that are that actually want to help themselves and get out of this poverty trap.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my friends, in listening to them on the other side of the aisle yesterday, talked about, I mean, almost without exception, they acknowledged that this is a really good idea, but maybe we ought to wait.
Exactly.
Wait for the next farm bill. Wait 5 years, 6 years, 7 years from now. And the chairman just really outlined of why the timing. I would have loved for these pilots to be totally completed. But, you know, we don't have that kind of control over the bureaucracy, and we do have we have at least three interim reports with great outcomes, trends going in the right direction. But the chairman spoke to the timing. Today it's estimated that there's a minimum of 5 million jobs that are open and available. Now, these are skills-based education jobs. These are not 4-year degrees, 6-year degrees. And that number is growing, as the chairman said. Every week we hear about new national companies that are expanding their hiring dramatically. And we know that when we go back home, we talk with local folks that are, because of a number of circumstances, some of this is the tax cuts, some of this is the peeling away of regulations, that the new jobs are being created, but a skills gap exists. And so the timing is now on this. Plus, I'd hate to look at a family who's hungry and struggling financially and think that we could give them just a little bit of a support nudge to pursue an on-ramp to opportunity. And I'd hate to have to look at them and say, we'll get around to you, but it may be in 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. This is frustrating. We have these 10 pilot projects that GT mentioned were funded in the 14 Farm Bill. Those will ripen next year. With this bill gets done, it'll come effective October 1st of 2018. States would then have 2 years from that point to put together their plans. And all of those 10 pilots out there, if there are good ideas in that, and they will be incorporated by the states in their particular plans. There'll be plenty of time to make that happen. So the idea about, let's just wait some additional time. I'm with the GT. They got folks out there right now that are listening to your radio programs, or will listen to them, and thinking, hey, if I could get some of that training, if I could learn, if I go 10 weeks to become X, Y, or Z, I could make a little bit more money for my family, and that's a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, Jeff Nally, Cromwell Ag Radio again. A bigger picture question, 179% tariff now on U.S. sorghum. If the administration were going to kick in and help, how would you recommend? Existing farm programs, direct payment, how would you resolve it?
Well, not direct payments, but under the old direct payment scheme that we did away with in 14. We need additional information. All of us can certainly sense that kind of tariff on sorghum is going to hammer our sorghum producers out there, and I represent those guys. But Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Ag, was given the authorities to cope with this as a part of the disaster bill. And as he gathers the data, the information, we see how people are being hurt and where they're being hurt and if they're being hurt, and he's got those resources. And I think as we gather data as to exactly what goes on within those individual commodities or whatever, then we'll be in a better position to do it. We'd always love more money in the current existing programs. The Title I programs are set up for this kind of circumstance. We don't have any new money, but if new money became available, that would certainly be a way to get at it. But that was not the charge that GT and I were charged with. We had to bring this in at budget neutral, and we've done that. But as we gather more facts, then we'll be able to fine-tune that. So there will be some combination of the two. But right now I'm expecting it would have to be outside the Farm Bill, because I've got no indication yet that we'll be giving additional resources to plug into Title I. But we would certainly take them if we could. Now we're time for one more question.
A quick question on conservation. This is PJ Griegspoor again with Farm Progress. The CFP going away is being rolled into EQIP. What are the money numbers on that? Is it the same amount of conservation funding? So that anybody who has a CSP contract? The money would be there to change to EQIP?
No, what will happen, though, is those CSP contracts will stay in place and will just roll off under their normal expiration. We will just not create any new CSP contracts. So we will honor the trade, the commitments made, and we roll a good slug of that money. I don't have the number right off the top of my head. We do reduce spending overall in conservation, but we do beef up the money in the EQIP significantly from where it currently is, because most of us, been our experience at the EQIP program, which is, as you know, a shared responsibility between the landowner and the property owner and the U.S. taxpayer, has shown great results and is oversubscribed for the money that we've had in place. And so this will help us address that issue. I want to thank everybody for being online. GT and I have got a little bit of work to do with respect to finding 190 more votes. We had 26 yesterday. We need 190 total to get to 216, assuming we get this done before these open seats start getting filled. But, no, I'm excited about the process. I've got a great partner with GT. As you've heard, he is very articulate on the nutrition title and other parts of the farm bill. But both of us are very proud of the work product we kicked out yesterday. I think the American people will be better understanding of it. The longer it goes on, the more opportunity we have to talk to them about what it really does, as opposed to much of the misinformation that was provided yesterday during testimony from the Democrats. And I think they will come to understand that they didn't have it quite right either. And when that happens, maybe we can come together and get 435 votes on the farm bill. But thanks, everybody, for being on the line today. Appreciate it.